It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning March 22, 2024. My dateline once again is Dublin, Ireland, where the big unexpected news has been resignation by the country's leader, the Taoiseach, or Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, for reasons that he said were political but also personal. In many ways, Varadkar has represented the new modern Ireland, not least because he is of partly Indian heritage and is in a same-sex relationship. But before he stepped aside, Varadkar played his part in a global crisis that can look very different once an observer like myself travels away from America. One truth becomes especially clear: just how fast Israel is losing friends worldwide as it pursues its vengeful war against the Palestinians of Gaza. Ireland has been over the years a fairly steady supporter of the State of Israel, often reasserting the state's right to exist and to defend itself, albeit balancing that with some long-standing support for the idea of a Palestinian state too. But Dublin's relations with Tel Aviv have seriously soured because of the war, and Ireland's balance has decisively tilted. That became extra clear over Ireland's national holiday. The month of March is an Irish season in much of the Western world's media because the 17th is St. Patrick's Day, when, among other celebrations, the Taoiseach, along with a retinue of politicians, entertainers, and, of course, camp-following journalists, makes the traditional journey to Washington to cement relations in that direction. But this year, there was a difference. In his talks with President Joe Biden, the heaviest message that Varadkar carried was that there had to be a ceasefire in Gaza. Ahead of the meeting, Varadkar had told the Irish Times and other journalists, "I appreciate that there will be differences of opinion in relation to Israel and Gaza. There's very strong historic support for Israel in the US for lots of different reasons. But that's not going to deflect me from saying what I feel needs to be said." In a way, the Irishman was speaking for much of Europe, in particular strong critics like the leaders of Spain, Belgium, and ever more so now, France as well, in the outspoken form of President Emmanuel Macron. He was provoked to some blunt anger over the Israeli military opening fire recently during a delivery of food aid to Gazans. He accused Israeli soldiers of deliberately targeting civilians, and Macron also voiced what he called his firm opposition to an Israeli offensive in Rafah, which could only lead, he said, to a humanitarian disaster of a new magnitude. Biden reacted to Varadkar's blunt message by saying in their joint White House press conference, "The Taoiseach and I agree about the urgent need to increase humanitarian aid in Gaza and get the ceasefire deal." We're all well aware how little Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu cares about the opinion of critical nations like Ireland and all the others. One of his wilder far-right government ministers expressed their scorn in a curious way, saying that Israel should send its troublesome Palestinian population to Ireland. Israelis of whatever outlook, though, have to care, however unwillingly, about what America feels as their biggest ally and arms supplier. So perhaps the more threatening dimension to Israel's plummeting global reputation is this: Varadkar was pushing on an open door when he won Biden over to agreeing with him so wholeheartedly and prominently. The same Biden who previously rarely wavered, in public at least, from a depth of support for Israel that would often sound unquestioning. The whole tone now, though, is very different, and not just at the White House. Much more piquant than that unanimity between the Irish Premier and the Irish-American President has been the remarkable attack on Netanyahu on the U.S. Senate floor from Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, saying the Israeli Premier had, quote, "lost his way" in his bloodthirsty pursuit of the Gaza war. Schumer, of course, as a Washington press corps rather stunned by his speech has kept pointing out, is our country's topmost Jewish American elected representative. And what's more, the man at the pinnacle of leaders, Joe Biden, once again felt he had to chime in very approvingly, this time including his sense of the way American sentiment is changing. He made a good speech, he said of Schumer, underlining his approval by saying that the Senate leader, quote, expressed a serious concern shared not only by him but by many Americans. Jewish commentators occasionally pointed out that Schumer's name is from the Hebrew word shomer, for guardian or watchman, and that, being the canny and careful politician he has always been, he sees it as a time now to be a guardian of Israel's best interests by urging Netanyahu to step aside. If Netanyahu doesn't and presses on with his plan to crush the reportedly last battalions of Hamas in Rafah, whatever the cost to Palestinian civilians, including families and children, and whatever the White House says, what then? It's been journalistically interesting, and we should go no further than that, to hear at second hand all of the off-the-record press briefings emerging from Biden's people about possibly staunching the flow of American weapons to Israel on the grounds that they're being used, illegally under U.S. law, to destroy people's human rights. It's conceivable, just conceivable, that Biden might, just might, be one U.S. president who could do that. The problem would be, of course, Netanyahu sticking to his old certainties. He is, after all, the man who said, when caught live by a hot mic when he was unaware of it, I know what America is. It's a thing that you can move very easily. Since Biden is so obviously aware of how the global winds are blowing, and how domestic winds are blowing too, especially among essential younger members of his own support base, the direction in which America is now moving might be changing to something that Netanyahu will not find so easy. I'll change the subject now at the risk of being accused of flippancy. American media did not make much of this, rather instead adopting a casual near-mocking tone. But the 20th of this month was the annual World Happiness Day, so it has been proclaimed by the United Nations since 2013. But as I noted, one Irish TV host here was making clear in a popular broadcast, this is not a day when we're supposed to go around with smiles pasted on our faces. It's more an opportunity for reflection on what makes each of us happy as a human being. Naturally enough, the UN, especially its many population experts, had some serious geopolitical purpose in flagging this day in the calendar. It's an opportunity for them to publish, and hope the world's media will carry, an annual international happiness report. It's a subjective matter, of course, perhaps more than any other kind of opinion survey, as samples of people across 143 countries were asked to assess how content they are with their life as a whole, considering what values they hold dear. And like many surveys, its usefulness lies mainly in its being its own benchmark, giving us a chance to notice trends over time. For the seventh year running now, the country with the happiest people is Finland. No single element in Finnish life will necessarily explain its leading position, but the report's editor, John Halliwell, who is an emeritus university professor from Vancouver, Canada, in economics, perhaps ironically, since that is infamously nicknamed the dismal science, he offers just an impressionistic view. He says it's like wallets being returned if they're dropped in the street in Finland. People helping each other day in, day out. Very high quality and universally distributed health care and education opportunities, so everyone more or less comes out of the starting gate with the same chances in life. The other Scandinavian countries, perhaps unsurprisingly, jostle with each other in the top five every year. But there's also breaking news. The United States this year has dropped out of the top 20. The main element contributing to this is evidently what the report calls a plunge in the sense of well-being among Americans under 30 years of age. We can't help but read that as very telling, I think. For what it's worth, my old home country of the UK clings on to position number 20, And here, in their Emerald Isle, the Irish are sitting happily at number 17 out of the whole world. Without further comment, that's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.